Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Champions League Draw Special Edition, recorded late last night, Thursday, August 24th. You're about to listen to the first 15 minutes of the full 60-minute podcast. If you want the whole show, head to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to become a socio.
It's been an exciting evening sitting watching the balls coming out of the pot. There's some really juicy fixtures there. Graham, what have you made of it overall? It's some pretty fascinating fixtures.
Happy as a sandboy, you know, that's the easiest one you'll ask me all night. When it comes to the Champions League, I lose my heart every season all over again. And let's start off alphabetically, will we?
Yeah.
Because the Europa League holders, Group A looks a very Jose Mourinho draw to me. I'm not going to be lulled into that stupid idea of saying easy draw. Yeah, because there are teams from lower profile leagues. There's work to be done, but one that I like, because the Champions League doesn't simply draw us in or sell for 800. What was it? BT Sport bought the Champions League rights for 700-800 million. That doesn't happen because every single tie rivets you when it's drawn out. There's this cocktail, this mix of history and memories and great jewels that you can replay either in your mind or via the media. And it's obviously the case for any romantic, anybody who cares about the soul of the game. You look at United Benfica and you say 1968, Wembley. And I think that prior to that, a lot of people in Europe, particularly since then, United fans know this inside out, but particularly in Europe, Manchester United as a real force after the disaster of Munich in 1958, came a couple of seasons before 1968 when they beat Benfica at Wembley. When, you know, they've won narrowly at Old Trafford, they go to the Stadium of Light in the Portuguese capital. George Best runs the night. George Best just goes out and destroys Benfica. And I think United end up winning 4-1. And that's why, to me, instantly, it won't have any effect on the strategy or the hamstring strains or which energy drinks the two sides use this time. But to start with, if you just mention United and Benfica, your mind is drawn to George Best and Dennis Law and Eusebio, and that great build-up to 68, Brian Kidd scoring in the final. Instantly, that brings back ghosts of greatness to me. And then another thing that I would say that's interesting is people forget that it's where Jose Mourinho got his big break when he was assistant to Louis van Gaal at Barcelona. And Bobby Robson's promoted Mourinho to work with the B team. He's come as a translator, but he's earned his spurs. He's beginning to coach and have responsibility. And when Bobby Robson goes, van Gaal looks at him and keeps him as co-assistant with Ronald Koeman at the Camp Nou. And it's Mourinho who breaks away. Mourinho who says, I want to be an individual coach. I want to show what I know, test what I know. And he goes to Benfica and he's doing really well. And of the 9 games when he's in charge, I think they win 5, including the derby against Sporting, draw 3 and lose 1. And it's when the board changes in December of his very first season after 9 games. And the incoming president has an idea. It's not that he doesn't fancy Mourinho. He's got an idea of the new man. I think it's Tony, by memory, but he's a Benfica legend, and the idea is that this is what's been sold to the public, and blah, blah, blah. And Mourinho plays a canny little game and doesn't believe that he's instantly about to be sacked, but doesn't believe that the president's going to keep him long term. So when the president comes in, Mourinho says, well, I want a contract extension. And the new president says, no. And Mourinho walks, Martin, just leaves. And I think it's something that Benfica have mourned just about ever since, at least until now. But if I can maybe be more detailed still, the coach of Benfica, who's made them champions sequentially, I think, for the last three, is Rui Vitória. And he's an extraordinary man, to my way of thinking. A really moderate career, but a great, I think a terrific manager and a terrific coach. And somebody who kind of shocked me a year ago, just about now. I was asking him about, he was telling me that one of the most difficult things, because if you remember, they ran, two seasons ago, they ran Bayern Munich really, really close, defeated them in Portugal and kept the tie, you know, worked the tie a little bit. And I was asking him about exceeding your expectations when, if you're Benfica, you've got a relatively low budget, you are a selling club, and you're operating in a league which, and this will echo with Celtic fans who are, you know, fans of the only Scottish club in the Champions League this season again, where you're not necessarily prepared, you're not tested for the Champions League. And Rui Vitória said to me, look, his exact words, I had a very difficult and important moment in my life when both my parents died on the same day. And from that day on, my career took a different meaning to me. Life changes, and the way that you look at life and football and the playing of the game becomes different. So the key moment changed me as a person, and I appreciate things more. And at the same time, I've got a sense of calm that if I overcame the really difficult obstacle of losing my parents, when it comes to anything I'll face in football, I just think I've been through worse and nothing can affect me anymore. It's helped me to be stronger and to overcome obstacles with calmness and tranquility. And what happened in, I think back in 2002, September 2002, we're coming up to the 15th anniversary of his mum and dad, who were then in their early 50s, driving back from a fishing trip with their two best friends, one of whom was godfather to Rui Vitória's kid, and a car crash killed them all. And I didn't know about this, and I didn't ask him about this. He raised it as something that had conditioned him. So all I'm raising this for is that I very much respect and like him. He's a guy who, in the half hour I spent speaking to him, struck me as somebody who transmits things very well. And if I got a touch of what the players get when he tries to inculcate them with ideas, I can understand why he's a very good coach. And I'll now go for maybe a slightly happier little thing that I know about Benfica, and that Jonas is a Brazilian who I've always really, really loved. People might remember him at Valencia, where he kind of played a roving, attacking, quite mobile in number 10. And Jonas is a guy who took up professional football, got into professional training really, really late in his life, such that he was probably about 18 before he became a full-time pro. And then his career absolutely rocketed. I think he was born in Porto Alegre. And if my memory serves, he began to build his life at Grêmio. But there was a point at which he missed a sitter in a game, a really, really high-profile game. And he became known, the press sort of hammered him as being, and they titled him as being, the worst player in the world. That was the headline the next day after he missed a hugely important kind of open goal for Grêmio, is my memory. And therefore, the fact that he went on to become a Brazil international, the fact that a couple of seasons ago he scored, I think, 32 and 34. He's got 4 and 3 this season, age 33. And we make a big fuss about Adoriz and how he can keep going for Athletic at that age. Jonas is just a fabulous player, inventive and fun. And it might be that he's got a solitary battle against Manchester United. It might be that this fabulous little test has come just at the wrong stage for him. He had a terrible injury last season, played fewer goals. So 2 seasons ago was his really big time. But he's come back this season looking, what they say, in true fate here, really sharp. And I've met him and talked to him, but I just love watching him play. Time and again, I use this phrase with you about players that will make me go to a game or say, this is what I'm going to write about, or turn on the television if I can't get somebody's game. And Jonas is one of them. So in my opinion, that's the thing that, or these are the things that stand out about that group A, where if we're honest, if United don't win that, it's a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about before about the importance of the flow of fixtures, and obviously looking at match day one, you can see that Benfica and Manchester United both start at home, so obviously that's, in theory, should allow them to get off to quite a strong start.
It helps, yeah, absolutely agree.
Yeah. I mean, just kicking forward into Group B, which is a fascinating group, what are the kind of the main talking points from that one that you would like to pick up on?
Listen, not all our socios come from Scotland or are Celtic fans, so maybe we shouldn't be hooked on the fact that, you know, the only Scottish club is playing in this group. It's clear that when Bayern move from Hitzfeld to Pep and then appoint Ancelotti, it's because they want to dominate in Europe. They go for people who, and I so remember what Rummenigge said, that the idea was it was to win in Europe, to dominate in Europe, but to seduce, to make people admire them and love them, make them a simpatico team, not just that team that wins all the time. And I look at them and I think they'll be eyeing up Paris Saint-Germain. And rightly or wrongly, although the two men right now, Hoeneß and Rummenigge, don't get on well. Hoeneß was this brilliant club manager, business manager, who applied a rigorous code of conduct to Bayern Munich's business and made them independent and made them wealthy and brought sponsors and imbued values and was outright bullishly aggressive to other clubs everywhere he went, and then got jailed for tax evasion. And Rummenigge, although, you know, they've known each other really since they were youth cadets, kind of fell out with them. And Hoeneß is back at the club, but they've not repaired the relationship. But what I know they both share is this desire that Bayern Munich stay within their spending limits, make more money out of European competition. And in the European Clubs Association, it's Bayern Munich above anybody else who are driving for an idea of a European league and using it to bully UEFA and say, well, of course, what we want is longer participation in Europe. And for that reason, Bayern Munich were one of the clubs that most approved financial fair play, because their claim was that they could justify all their spending. And they built the stadium in a record time. They expanded it in such a way that it now makes them record amounts of money. Sponsors queue up to be with them. They are in an unbelievably wealthy and secure position. But they'll be looking at Paris Saint-Germain, and I'm saying they'll be saying cheats. You know, if Neymar has been signed at 220 plus tax, probably in the region of 250. Before you even talk about what he's going to cost them in wages, you know, it's a 600 million euro deal. Yet they're about to sign Mbappe as well. Mm-hmm. And they'll offload players. It looks like Aurier might be going to Spurs, and the idea of Di Maria coming to Barcelona isn't gone yet. But to sign Mbappe and Neymar in the same summer, based on what you've already got, is pretty extraordinary. And one thing we learned last season is that we shouldn't brand Paris Saint-Germain because of the 6-goal loss at the Camp Nou. What we should bring into account is that although they stumbled in the league, they were dominant in the cups domestically. They were finding their personality under Unai Emery month by month. And in that 4-0 win at Parc des Princes, they were absolutely extraordinary against Barcelona. They've added Dani Alves. I think they're better all round. Their goals should be absolutely flowing. If they sign Mbappe and they've got Mbappe and Neymar and say Cavani as their first choices, but they're absolutely jam packed with goals and players that they can bring on, even if they let Lucas Moura go, then Bayern Munich, the genuine aristocrats of Europe, will be looking with fear and loathing at Paris Saint Germain. It's already there. There's a massive story in the group, and you can bet. Come back to me on this, Martin. Socios, come back to me. But there'll be insults from Uli Hoeneß to Paris Saint-Germain. Just absolutely count on it. The thing that, from Celtic's point of view, I think they'll look at is that they've a very brief record against Bayern Munich. I think only two competitive matches. I was at the two competitive matches against Paris Saint-Germain. Celtic played under Tommy Burns. Losing.
What kind of years would that be, Graham?
I think we're talking 94-5 of that region. You know, it's definitely Tony Burns' side. Luis Fernandez, the France midfielder with Spanish parentage, who was in that brilliant Jerez, Tigana, and Fernandez midfield when Platini is the 10 and they win the European Championships in 84. That Luis Fernandez now runs a show called Luis Attacks on Radio Monte Carlo. That Paris Saint-Germain side was very good, featuring future Rangers manager Paul Le Guen and Patrice Loco, this fabulous but troubled player who ended up with very, very severe mental problems, temporary, but was in an institution for them not long after beating Celtic at Parkhead 3-0. I think he scored twice, but I do remember big Pierre Van Hooijdonk missing a glaring-headed chance in the Parc des Princes where Celtic lost 1-0, and seeing that the ball, he'd been way ahead the ball home, but his eyes had been dazzled by the spotlights of the floodlights. And I look at one thing I'll take from this is that I have a suspicion that Bayern Munich are not stronger, they're not more muscular, they're not. I don't believe they've got a better squad than a year ago or 2 years ago. I think they look experimental. I'm not absolutely convinced that they're untouchable. To start to tilt as a Scot at Bayern Munich when Celtic are still a relatively fledgling project in Europe, all I'll say is this, that Ancelotti, who's their coach at Bayern Munich, has a big record of taking his old club Milan to Parkhead. Three times he's done it, 2-0 draws and a 2-1 defeat. And I think we're going to see a game where the typical things happen at Parkhead, where everybody responds and the media goes crazy because a big club's coming to town. It's a fantastic break from the, you know, the stodgy, salty porridge of the Premier League, Scottish Premier League. But I'm unwilling to say that Celtic can't have a right tilt at beating Bayern Munich in Glasgow. Paris Saint-Germain looked to me like group winners there. And I quite like the fact that Celtic starts at home and then play at Anderlecht. And I think if they had, you know, been too brutal ties to begin with and kind of like the game's a bogey before you've begun. So I don't think it's like that. And if you're a romantic like me, you look at a group that says Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain, Anderlecht, when I was growing up, were winning European trophies or getting far in Europe every season and you wanted to watch them. And Celtic, that Group B is fun. Group B is absolute fun.
So that was Graham's analysis of Groups A and B. If you want to hear his take on Groups C to H, go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to get the full show and unlock hours of bonus content.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.